Well, this is June 27th, 2023. It's 18:59 hours Eastern Daylight Time. Ward Green with you. I have some notes I want to go over from yesterday that I took yesterday, last night. I had to get up. I was already half asleep, and I had to write these things down because they occurred to me. And they were important. And here's what I wrote. Number one was conformity is not an option. Conformity is not an option. Number two, vigilance is more important than sleep. Number three, simplicity is more important than money. Number four, the only joy in having money is controlling it. Number five, too much cooked food makes you sleepy. Those were the points I wrote down. We have a quote today from Mark Twain, too. The quote from Mark Twain is, Mark Twain said, "Giving up smoking is the easiest thing in the world. I know, because I've done it thousands of times." That was from Mark Twain. And now I've got a song for today from 1976, but the chart is from the combined 1976 and 77. It was number one in 17 different charts around the world. This is probably the biggest hit maybe ever on the worldwide hit parade. I mean, Australia number one, Belgium number one, Canada top singles number one on the RPM top singles, Czechoslovakia number one, Denmark number one, the Netherlands on two charts number one, Ireland number one. New Zealand number one, Norway number one, South Africa number one, Soviet Union number one, Sweden number one, UK number one, and two charts in the US number one, and West Germany number one. This is from ABBA from 1976, Dancing Queen. So from 1976, ABBA with Dancing Queen. Today's study, we have a lot to cover possibly here if we try to do it all. I don't know what we're going to cover today. I had a lot of sleep yesterday, but it really doesn't necessarily make you feel more energetic when you sleep more. Really, it's not what people think. It's more true that people eat wrong. They eat too much cooked food and they're drowsy all the time. They're sleepy, but the sleep isn't doing them much good because it's just trying to fight against the cooked food is why they need to sleep. They need to try to recover from eating that food. It's better if we can eat less processed, less cooked food, more raw food if possible, closer to raw. Or, you know, that doesn't necessarily at all mean we eat raw food that isn't supposed to be raw. We don't eat raw meat, you know, or things. But there are many things we can eat that are raw, like nuts and seeds and olives, olive oil, you know, I mean, salad. I don't eat much salad, but matcha tea is raw, for example. Now, any thorough treatment of the Exodus route must include the confidence of early Christians. This is from Wild Road, Part 2, Chapter 12, Paragraph 8. The early Christians are Nihilus and Ammonius mentioned here. They having stated that it is, quote, 2 days, unquote, from Elim to Mount Sinai. And, of course, Elim is a place mentioned on the list at Numbers 33, right? But we're not even going to look at that. You can look at that. That's today's scripture. We're going to come to that. But there is an excess of 43 miles from Elim to Mount Sinai, with Sinai being Mount Serbal and Elim being Zalima on the coast. So that's actually, it is 2 days from Elim, but the 43 miles is actually from the wilderness of Sin to Sinai. So, and it's 1 day from Elim, so it's actually more than 43 miles from Elim to Mount Sinai. Okay, it's even 2 days more in excess of the 2 days, which is mentioned by both Nihilus and Ammonius, the early Christians. Thus, Elim be best placed no further north than Zalima. Because how else could it be 2 days if we go more than 43 miles plus a one-day journey of 11 miles? That's 54 miles. How can a two-day journey be more than 54 miles? So it just didn't seem like that was possible. Couldn't be further north than Zalima. And that made us also more sure about identifying Zalima. Backtracking now to the Jews' departure point, okay, from the Nile Delta. When they departed from some place in the Nile Delta, which is, we can use Cairo as an approximate point, it gives us 120.9 kilometers, 75.1 miles, as the distance from Cairo as the crow flies to the crossing point, quote, crossing point, unquote, which is the crossing point where they cross the Red Sea. At an average of 12.5 miles per day, this is 6 days. 6 days to reach the Red Sea crossing. Of course, they could have rested every other day, too. When we allow 1 day to gather at the departure city, there are 7 days to the camp at the Red Sea, where they were chased by Pharaoh after his finding out that the Israelites were wandering in the land in confusion, with the wilderness closed in upon them. That's from Exodus 14:3. And you won't get the sense of any of this if you don't read the scriptures. This Exodus 14:3 gives a good sense of it. We're not going to have time to cover it, but anyone can look it up. Granting that it might have taken Pharaoh less time to travel to the Red Sea, but more time to prepare to go, it might be reasonable to assume another 7 days as the time taken for Pharaoh to arrive at the Red Sea on the 29th day of Nisan, that is the last day of the month. That would make the night of the crossing the last day of Nisan, and Israel's arrival in Arabia as Iyar the First. It truly might be said with double meaning that when Israel arrived in the wilderness of Sin on Iyar 15, a distance of a 7-day journey from Oyun Musa, or the Well of Moses, it was the 15th day since they had come out of Egypt as well. They had come out of Egypt literally by crossing the Red Sea onto the other side, which is no longer part of Egypt, but also they had come out of Egypt in the sense of they had defeated the Pharaoh's army because it was all washed away and they were all drowned in the Red Sea, the army of Pharaoh, including the Pharaoh. The ratio of travel to rest days remains at 1-to-1 in this view. So we had a 7-day journey taking 15 days, in other words. That's a 1-to-1 resting every other day. This fairly traditional understanding of the Israelite Exodus, with perhaps the Israelites resting on IR 1 at Oyun Musa, from its simple average daily distances to locations, proves the account of their first month. Quite a remarkable thing. I can show you something now that's very interesting here. Possibly if we get to see it. Well, there's the reference to the book, Israel in the Wilderness, by Mr. Forster, Charles Forster. Here's where he's talking about Ammonius. And he calls the place Elam. Also, he calls it Rethu. But he identifies it as a place being near, in his book here, Mirka. It's near to Mirka. So when we look at this, that's not it. Where is it? Here? Where did I have it? Is it there? There it is. Okay. Mirka. Right. So if we zoom in on this particular map, which is from the back inside cover of the book of which we're speaking, Israel in the Wilderness, there's Mirka right there. So Mirka is right here compared to Cairo and the crossing of the Red Sea. It's about halfway. The crossing is between Cairo or the Nile Delta and Mirka, which is perfect because it's about 7 days each way with 15 days total, let's say roughly, and then multiply by two because of the resting days, and that's about a month. So that's how long it took them to get there to the wilderness of Sin. Maybe we can look that up, but I don't want to because it changes too many things which are already in place. Okay, so you can look that up. Mirka, he says, is the place called Rethu, or it's near Elam, or it's Zanaima, and you can see that on the map too. That's what I should show you. Yeah, there's Zalima right there, or Zanaima. Zalima's right there on the coast, and there's Mirka right next to it. So that's why it's all part of the same area. So that's the place that Mirka is bordering on the sea. It's a low plain of Mirka. It's a plain, but bordering on the sea, on the Red Sea. Okay, so fascinating. And this Budera has nothing to do with the Bedia or Budia that we talked about earlier either. It's in a different location. But our French brothers can translate this or read the French part, which is written by Ammonius here, from which Mr. Forster quotes. Okay, that's all for our study for today. We need to move forward here. It's a marvelous, marvelous analysis. And there was a lot of work required in order to understand it. Ecclesiastes, our scripture for today, 4 and verse 2. And I congratulated the dead who had already died, rather than the living who were still alive. Why? Well, in verse 1, the tears of those being oppressed, but they had no comforter. And on the side of their oppressors there was power, so that they had no comforter. So it's actually, in some ways, better to be dead than to be alive. That's what the scripture there at Ecclesiastes is telling us. Now we have Leviticus 27. It's fairly long. I don't know if we'll get to Acts today or not. No, I don't think so, probably. But if we really rush, we could. But maybe we shouldn't rush. This is the last chapter of Leviticus, so I'd like to finish. It would be good, I think, if we could finish the book of Leviticus. Would it not? Little children, I think it might be. Leviticus 27, and Jehovah continued to speak to Moses, saying, speak to the sons of Israel, and you must say to them, in case a man makes a special vow offering of souls to Jehovah according to the estimated value, and the estimated value has to be of a male from 20 years old up to 60 years old, the estimated value must then become 50 shekels of silver by the shekel of the holy place. But if it is a female, the estimated value must then become 30 shekels. And if the age is from 5 years old up to 20 years old, the estimated value of the male must then become 20 shekels, and for the female, 10 shekels. And if the age is from a month old up to 5 years old, the estimated value of the male must then become 5 shekels of silver, and for the female, the estimated value must be 3 shekels of silver. Now, if the age is from 60 years old upward, if it is a male, the estimated value must then become 15 shekels, and for the female, 10 shekels. But if he has become too poor for the estimated value, he must then stand the person before the priest, and the priest must put a valuation upon him. According to what the vower can afford, the priest will put a valuation upon him. And if it is a beast, such as one presents in offering to Jehovah, everything of what he may give to Jehovah will become something holy. He may not replace it, and he may not exchange it with good for bad, or with bad for good. But if he should exchange it at all with beast for beast, it itself must then become, and what is exchanged for it should become something holy. And if it is any unclean beast, such as one may not present in offering to Jehovah, he must then stand the beast before the priest, and the priest must put a valuation upon it, whether it is good or bad, according to the value estimated by the priest, so it should become. But if he wants to buy it back at all, he must then give a fifth of it in addition to the estimated value. Now, in case a man should sanctify his house as something holy to Jehovah, the priest must then make a valuation of it, whether it is good or bad. According to what valuation the priest makes of it, so much it should cost. But if the sanctifier wants to buy his house back, he must then give a fifth of the money of the estimated value in addition to it, and it must become his. And if it is some of the field of his possession that a man would sanctify to Jehovah, the value must then be estimated in proportion to its seed. If an homer of barley seed, then at 50 shekels of silver. If he should sanctify his field from the year of Jubilee on, it should cost according to the estimated value. And if it is after the Jubilee that he sanctifies his field, the priest must then calculate for him the price in proportion to the years that are left over until the next year of Jubilee. and a deduction should be made from the estimated value. But if the sanctifier of it would at all buy the field back, he must then give a fifth of the money of the estimated value in addition to it, and it must stand fast as his. Now, if he should not buy the field back, but if the field is sold to another man, it may not be bought back again. And the field, when it goes out in the Jubilee, must become something holy to Jehovah, as a field that is devoted. The possession of it will become the priest's. And if he sanctifies to Jehovah a field purchased by him that is no part of the field of his possession, the priest must then calculate for him the amount of the valuation up till the year of Jubilee, and he must give the estimated value on that day. It is something holy to Jehovah. In the year of the Jubilee, the field will return to the one from whom he bought it, to the one to whom the possession of the land belongs. Now, every value should be estimated in the shekel of the holy place. The shekel should amount to 20 gerahs. Only the firstborn among beasts, which is born as the firstborn for Jehovah, no man should sanctify it. Whether bull or sheep, it belongs to Jehovah. And if it is among the unclean beasts, and he must redeem it according to the estimated value, he must then give a fifth of it in addition to it. But if it should not be bought back, it must then be sold according to the estimated value. Only no sort of devoted thing that a man might devote to destruction, out of all that is his, whether from mankind or beasts, or from the field of his possession, may be sold, and no sort of devoted thing may be bought back. See, the unclean beasts were not to be devoted. It is something most holy to Jehovah, the devoted things. No devoted person who might be devoted to destruction from among mankind may be redeemed. That is, those who are awaiting to be executed. He should be put to death without fail. And every tenth part of the land out of the seed of the land, every tenth part of the land out of the seed of the land and the fruit of the tree belongs to Jehovah. It is something holy to Jehovah, and if a man wants to buy any of his tenth part back at all, he should give a fifth of it in addition to it. As for every tenth part of the herd and flock, everything that passes under the crook, that's the shepherd's crook, the tenth head should become something holy to Jehovah. A crook is a crooked stick that the shepherd uses. He should not examine whether it is good or bad, neither should he exchange it. But if he would exchange it at all, it itself must then become, and what is exchanged for it should become something holy. It may not be bought back. These are the commandments that Jehovah gave Moses as commands to the sons of Israel in Mount Sinai. That's the end of Leviticus. The next chapter is Numbers, and it begins, it looks like tomorrow, the 28th. We can begin that. And also, if we want to, I wanted to show you something here, very interesting. Where was it? Right. Yeah, I think it's here. Yeah, we want Ezekiel 3 and 8. 3 and 8 of Ezekiel. Look, I have made your face exactly as hard as their faces and your forehead exactly as hard as their foreheads. Look, I have made your face exactly as hard as their faces and your forehead exactly as hard as their foreheads. This is how Jehovah strengthened Ezekiel. So he would never be induced to give in to the wishes that they had, or to their information that they were presenting to him. He would never concede that they were correct, because his support was from Jehovah, and it was making him as strong in every way as they were. That's something that's very, very useful to know about for us. We should never accept unsolicited advice. You know, for example, people might, in any situation, present to us an alternative to what our plan is. But when we're an adult, once we become an adult, we should never allow other people to induce us to change our plan. That's something that is the only thing we have that makes us who we are, is that we have free will. And we have the ability to make choices. And those choices should be made not when we're under influence by someone else, okay? So we make up our mind, we can present that, and we should stick with it no matter what. That's the idea. We should never give that up, that free will that we have, because as soon as we give it up, how are we going to get it back again? We've already proven that we're willing to compromise, so we don't compromise. We must not accept advice when it wasn't solicited by us, right? And even if it was solicited, there's no requirement to accept the advice. That's very important to know. Make your own decisions. Keep things simple. Remain free. Don't conform. Make your decisions based on the understanding that you have in the principles of right and wrong, no matter where you learned them, whether you learned them from the Bible or wherever. But we know if we have experienced the Bible, whether we want to follow it or not, so we can follow Bible principles as our source of the principles of right and wrong, if we choose to. And and also we should be fully convinced that we are able to make our own choices under any conditions, that we may use those principles, whatever principles we've decided to use, to make our choices. I mean, of course we're free to change our mind, but it's very important that we not be induced to change our mind against our will, or in a haphazard way, or in any kind of... I mean, we should never be influenced by somebody else when it wasn't asked for by us, ever. That's just... it can't happen. We can't allow it to happen unless we want to lose our ability to make free will choices. And that's our power. That's the only power that we have, is our ability to make our own choices. Absolutely vital. Absolutely crucial. So that Dancing Queen by ABBA, it's a bigger hit than almost any other song that we've ever seen. It's a gigantic hit. It was a gigantic hit from 1976. Huge. Absolutely huge. A Swedish band. And the name ABBA, as I understand it, was from the names of the members of the band, their first initial of each of their names. Right. That's how they got their name. No, I mean, people don't understand this. It doesn't matter what, see, because what happens is we can decide what we want to do, and then Satan can come. Satan being represented by somebody who presents an alternative that looks more attractive than what we decided we were going to do. But it might be more attractive financially, or it might be more attractive in some other way, but it just might be for whatever reason, more attractive. That doesn't make it more advantageous if we deviated from our original plan, because then we can be induced to deviate another time, and we can lose our what's called integrity. Integrity is when you hold everything together. You keep your own personal business of what your desires, plans, what your understanding is altogether. You keep it to yourself. You can't reveal it to other people because that would just weaken you. You can't reveal it unless it's the part that Jehovah tells you you need to reveal, such as in the case of Ezekiel. Ezekiel was given a responsibility by Jehovah, and Jehovah said he was going to make his face exactly as hard as his opposer's face, and his forehead exactly as hard as their foreheads, so that he would never back down or be afraid of them. And remember, yesterday, the stars drove the night away, is what I think they were saying in the lyric of that song, September, Earth, Wind, and Fire, yesterday. So that's all for today's study. Little children, I love you. It's a very nice time we're having. Now that the smoke has cleared here from the wildfires, yesterday I had all my HEPAs running, my HEPA filters, which remove particulates from the air. They remove 99.97% of all particulate matter, and I have a central HEPA and three portable HEPAs for room HEPA use. Now, this is June 27th, 2023, 1932 hours. It's Ward Green, and on my behalf, it's Star and Cammie saying bye for now.